Alkman, wrong side of the pond. He is Chewy McChewerson, and I am Jeremy Lance.
Yeah, that's what my name is, and I'm Chewy McChewerson.
Yeah, I'd be in a holding pattern there because you were eating. What are we eating? Pita chips?
Yeah, some pita chips. Baked snacks.
Just a couple of white dudes in suburbia eating some pita chips.
One of us has a beard.
Yeah.
The other one has a part cut under their hair. Yeah, it sounds like the most hipstery thing that we should do, aside from beginning our soccer podcast as usual.
Also pretty hipster.
Yeah, we epitomize the term, that's for sure.
It's Sunday night. We're just hanging out here, enjoying some beers, watching Sunday night football. The Dolphins are playing, so it made me bring up the video that I'm sure everyone else has seen by now of the former Dolphins coach snorting cocaine and sending a love message to his hooker girlfriend.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You hadn't seen that before.
I hadn't.
Now changed your life.
So I'm assuming there are probably some people listening in that are in the same thing as me.
Like, what do I need to check out?
Let me tell you, it's worth going to watch that video, even if you're not interested in the NFL. It's amazing.
Probably the greatest 50 seconds that's ever been recorded.
Yeah, by a man expressing his love to a hooker. Who he is clearly impregnated.
He's impregnated.
And that they enjoy getting high together. They'll have to put that off for a little bit.
Big grain's fallen.
Mm-hmm.
He was heading into that meeting.
We are not doing that. We are just drinking beer. Tonight you brought us a lovely Ballast Point Unfiltered Sculpin.
Mm-hmm.
You called it something earlier.
A hazy.
A hazy IPA.
Hazy IPA, which is like that's the trendy beer. Back to us being hipsters.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real, that's the in beer right now.
Okay.
Hazy IPAs.
We've moved away from Saisons.
Saison, Sours had their run.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're back to the IPAs, but they got to be cloudy.
Okay.
They got to look like someone just washed their socks on them.
Well, these taste and look as such. No, it is delicious. We are drinking that, and we're going to need to drink another because our fantasy update.
Is it not going to be good? What are you trying to say? What are you trying to pull
I'm going
to
go ahead and say that, yeah, it is not good. The good thing that we did see is a return to the top of the table.
Captain Lukaku, was that a good idea?
No, it wasn't.
Oh,
a return to the top of the table, though, from a frequent podcast table topper, Jay Slack.
Mm. There he is.
Lawyers, Guns, and Money topping the table. I think he did earlier on in the season as well. Dethroning So Help Me God by Luke Burrows. You and I both had stellar down weeks in that I fell 9 places to 110th, and you fell 15 places to 109th.
Captain Lacazette, he started, right?
And
that's
no,
a big match, so why would he?
He did score. So,
but he started the match, right?
No, he didn't.
So he got those points for the match. Oh, what?
Nope. So you and I are continuously terrible, and both thoroughly onto page 3.
There's a third page, eh?
Yeah, there is a third page. So congrats to both of us for being awful at that. Let's get into today's show, though, instead. The benefits of that second beer brought on from fantasy drinking. We're going to, of course, dance through our Premier League action, right?
Mm-hmm. We got a lot of stuff to talk about.
There is a lot of stuff to get on with.
It's a good thing we got an international break coming.
That's right.
The U.S. are
going to spill over into the next
play
one.
A match against Portugal with players?
Maybe.
And not a manager?
And potentially not Christian Pulisic as well.
Oh, freaking awesome.
Yeah. We're also going to talk a little bit of Champions League. And then spend some time on the domestic side of things with MLS playoffs, now thick and very interesting. And then we're going to bring in our first guest of the season. Mm-hmm. Long time coming.
Yep.
Nipun Chopra is back from Sock Takes. He's going to talk to us a little bit about the NASL-USSF lawsuit and the outcomes that could potentially come from that. What he's kind of seeing in the...
I'm not going to lie. I feel like we made Nipun. I mean, when we first had him on... Like, that was, right when he first started to, break some news.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was kind of low on the radar, started breaking some news. And that first time he broke some news, we're like, we should get this guy on.
He's not even far from us.
Yeah, he's now just freaking soccer Twitter rock star.
So we can take credit for that then, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Absolutely.
So, Ronja the Pun made Nipun Chopra will be on to close out the show with us.
Big grains falling.
Yeah, big grains falling indeed. Let's start with the Premier League, though. And I figured we'd start something near and dear to your heart. A win for the Mighty Blues against the Mighty Reds.
Suck it. Suck it, Jose. So let's back up the truck to, hey, the starting 18, or the 18 came out.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to back it all the way up until Jose Mourinho was actually the manager at Chelsea.
That was a while ago.
Yeah.
We won a title. Mm-hmm. And then before that, he was also the manager.
Okay, we don't need to go that far back. Titles. Yeah, okay.
So there's that going for us. Champions League, though.
But you want to back it up to the 18.
I just want to go back to when the lineups came out.
Okay.
So back it up to 10:30 a.m. or if you're me and sitting in your kitchen and you hadn't changed your clocks, 9:30 a.m.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think we were all panicked about that a couple different times.
Like, do I have the clock right?
No.
Do you always look at your phone like, you changed, right? Like, you did yourself?
You're right. You did that. I don't have to change
it. Yeah, you handled that by yourself, right? I don't need to. It's not like on the stove. I don't need to.
Well, and what's confusing is the cable box automatically updates too, but then the stove. It's 12:35 on the stove right now, but it's 11:35 on the cable box.
What is even?
Well, who knows what time it is? But anyway, you saw that 18.
No David Luiz, and when pressed in pre-match, Antonio Conte referred to it as a tactical decision. A phrase that he reiterated when he was pressed on it again in post-match, where he said it was a technical decision, and that Christensen and whatever that 17-year-old with the, like, I listened to a lot of Bob Marley dreads.
Yeah.
That guy, he was like, those guys are the future of Chelsea. And if David Luiz wants to play, he needs to work hard.
Wow.
So, I mean, just call
laying
him
it
out.
Bare. Laying it bare. So, drama on that front.
Yeah, drama on that front. So, we had that going into the match where you're going, oh, there might be something to this whole, like, there's an unsettled locker room at Chelsea. Because
seems that way.
One of their key players has just been, out of the blue, just yardapulted off the 18.
Yardapulted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And just sitting there in street clothes behind the bench. So we had that going to start the match. Once the match started, though, you know, I think last week I was like, oh, I think it's going to be a much cagier affair.
Mm-hmm.
This game was wide open.
Yeah, it really was. Especially from a Mourinho perspective, you thought he would come out and kind of suffocate this thing in the way that he did against Spurs last week.
Right.
Is the way that he does pretty much whenever he faces the top sides. I don't know if it's he didn't try to do that. I think the part of me wants to wish that he was like, nah, I'm going after my old club. Like,
but you know what? This is what happened last year. Remember the home leg for Chelsea last season? Mourinho comes back to the bridge with United and gets pantsed 4-0. They, you know, Pedro scores a goal 30 seconds in. The match was wide open. It was not what anyone expected it to be. This was kind of that, minus the fact that Morata threw away three of those four goals and only ended up scoring one of them.
Well,
which I would say is my next point of contention. Morata, hey, awesome. He scored a goal. One of his really good friends, Cesar Azpilicueta, on the assist there. Two of them had a moment there by the corner flag.
They did have a little bit of a moment.
I mean, they were.
It looked special.
Beak to beak there, just, hey, how about us?
Well, every once in a while you find a special moment.
But frigging Morata had chance after chance after chance in this match. And almost all of them, well, all of them that involved his feet, he just tried to get cute with it.
What you find is you just put it on the kid's head and he does fine with it.
Because if you put it to his feet, he'll try to do one extra step over, one extra little move, shimmy, and then that's where he accidentally kicks the ball off the defender and it goes out. Or he kicks it off of himself and plays it out for a goal kick. Well, I mean, he did that a lot.
Luckily, though, he did get one of them.
He got one, and luckily it ended up being enough. Obviously, a crazy finish to this one is as United tried to throw the kitchen sink at Chelsea there at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Courtois coming up huge with some really big saves. I mean, this was a huge win for Chelsea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not only did it was it them beating, you know, they've played now three of the top teams. Beat United, beat Spurs, got pantsed by City.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good to get back on the plus side of things, getting that win, beating Jose. Conte, obviously, rumors are swirling like crazy because this is Chelsea, and mm-hmm. we've created a really crappy culture, thanks to Abramovich, of that if the manager stinks, the players can just basically just sell him down the river, and he'll get fired sooner or later.
Oh, weird how that might be happening right again.
I mean, you know what? As much as I want to crap on, and we do crap on, the fact that Arsenal has clearly hung on to Arsene Wenger longer than they should have, I wish for a middle ground somewhere with Chelsea, because right now they are the polar opposite of what Arsenal are.
Yeah.
Like, Arsenal are hanging on to Wenger forever, where Chelsea, the moment you suck, you are sent packing. And the players know that, and that creates a bad culture. And I'm hoping that it ends with Conte, that he's able to right this ship. Because we just need that culture within the club to die.
Will, right now, it's not looking like that's the case.
Well, no, because, we'll get later to their fiasco during the midweek.
Yeah. United, meanwhile, they've only won two of their last five. The real curiosity in this match, talking about 18s and 11s,
mm-hmm.
Lukaku.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah, he played.
Yeah.
He was out there. I think he had as many he had as many touches in the Chelsea box as David Luiz.
Ooh, that's a little troubling. So calls will continue to see him dropped from the 18 and 11, for that matter. But we will have to wait until at least after the international break to see if that's going to be the case. So congrats to Chelsea. They're now up to third in the table. Just a point off of second place, I believe.
A point or two, yeah.
Yeah, I think just behind Spurs on goal differential.
Time for you. Gunning for those legs.
Speaking of Spurs.
Big train's falling.
I feel like that's going to have to be the title of this episode. Tottenham and City both continue their winning ways. Spurs getting a 1-0 win over Crystal Palace in the early, early edition of...
That's kept it interesting there.
Yeah. This,
I mean, only a sucker, only a piece of crap team would lose to Crystal Palace.
Well, that's true, and you would know all about that, of course. This was a perfectly set up classic Spurs letdown match. Coming off a massive 3-1 win in the Champions League over Real Madrid in the midweek.
Yeah.
Literally one of the biggest all-time wins in club history. Playing bottom of the table, Crystal Palace, off to the worst start in Premier League history. This was like the Spurs of old would have lost this match at bare minimum.
Mm-hmm.
And Spurs of old at their worst would have like gotten crushed. And for a little bit of time, it seemed like, well, they may not get crushed, that they were going to lose this match. Palace, really unlucky to not get something out of this match. They were dominant through stretches of it. Tottenham definitely looked a little worse for wear on the short rest, but also battling with loads of injuries. Just listen to a few of the players that Tottenham were missing here. Hugo Lloris, starting goalkeeper, kind of a good guy.
Probably the best keeper in the league outside of probably him and De Gea are 1A and 1B.
Yeah, I would say that's probably the case. And backup Michel Vorm was also hurt.
What did he have? Bacchiotomy here?
Yeah, probably. Old man syndrome at bare minimum.
So who played? Brad Friedel?
No. Brad Friedel, believe it or not, is retired now and is commentating for Fox in his weird pseudo-English/American Northeast Ohio accent. So we
is that a Cleveland accent?
Yeah, I don't know. They are known for their British draw. Paulo Gazzaniga was the one who ended up getting the start. The 25-year-old Argentine ended up probably being the man of the match for Spurs. Had some,
who?
Yeah, Paulo Gazzaniga. Everyone was like, who is this Paulo Gazzaniga? I knew that he came from Southampton prior to coming to Spurs. Played lights out. Had a couple questionable moments as well, though, too. But everyone was freaking out about Apollo. You know, who is this Gazzaniga guy that's actually starting for Spurs? If you've not heard of the starter, that means you should be really concerned about who the backup was. And the backup was 18-year-old Alfie Whiteman. Alfie Whiteman.
I just pulled up this Apollo guy. Kind of looks like the lead singer of Static X. Mm. But, yeah, hey, shout out.
This is going to be one of multiple band call-outs, I feel like, over the course of the evening.
We are going early 2000 band call-outs in this podcast. Yeah,
that's what's going to happen. Also missing for Spurs, Dele Alli, who's going to miss the international break, thank God. And Toby Alderweireld, who are both facing hamstring issues. Spurs are a little bit hesitant to call an injury crisis.
Face your hamstring.
Yeah, it would be really hard if you're facing your hamstring. You understand why you're injured. So they were out, but Spurs are facing a little bit of an injury crisis. Heavily rotating in different backs on this match, and everyone just seemed a little out of sync. Ultimately, it came down to a beautiful curling effort from Sun Heung-min, that ends up being his 20th goal in the Premier League, who now makes him the top Asian goal scorer in Premier League history.
Who is two on that list?
Who do you think it might be? I wrote this down.
Kagawa?
Was not Kagawa.
He was a crap at, yeah, at United.
Did not really settle in very well.
Park.
It was Park.
Yes!
The compatriot South Korean who previous plied his trade at Manchester United. Earned himself a military pardon. Didn't have to do any military service due to winning the Champions League with them.
Huge.
Yeah. Other good news for Spurs in this match, obviously, the win keeps them third in the table, just separated by goal difference from second place holders United. Chelsea just a point behind them, so there's the clarification we were looking for from earlier. And then Pochettino also signaling this week he would not take a change. Here's what he exactly said. I would not change Spurs for another job in the world. Comforting. But also, if you have to say it, it makes you a little worried about it. So we'll leave it there, but I was pretty happy with the performance.
Moving on to City, they also roll past Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
3-1 is your final in this one. So we mentioned it during the fantasy report. Lacazette not starting.
No.
So you're in a big match. Going to need to score some goals.
Yep.
Guy
has proven he can score a few this
right.
year.
You spent £46 million on him.
Yeah, you don't need him in the 11.
Not on the 11. This is the second time this season where Lacazette was dropped. And shockingly, in both cases, it proved to be a bad idea.
And go figure, as soon as they do bring him on, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, he scores.
Yeah.
Barely on the field.
Shocking.
But a few minutes.
As I tweeted out, shockingly, your star striker can only score, at least scores more often,
mm-hmm.
when he's actually in the match.
Yeah. No, it's weird how you have to actually be on the field in order to
score.
Yeah,
it's a technicality.
Sometimes from the bench. You would say overall, though, that City were the dominant side.
Yes, I would say that.
Wenger may disagree with that, and we'll get to him in a moment. But that leaves City still undefeated on the season and opening up an 8-point gap at the top of the table. That's a bit of a stretch at this stage of the season.
Yeah, you mentioned Wenger, so he had a lot to say about this match.
Yeah, I actually wrote down the quote because it was too good to leave out.
It's funny. I want to jump back for a second, though. This was the day of really great quotes from managers. Not only did we have Conte putting David Luiz on blast in the pre and post match comments, we also had Jose Mourinho in his post match comments. Said that Chelsea scored in their only spell of being the team on the front foot.
Mm, good.
Did you watch the match?
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty much Chelsea in control most of the match. Eden Hazard kind of bossing things.
Yeah, weird. But you know, just that brief moment where they were on front foot is the only time that they actually were able to score.
That's true. Keeping in tune with managers speaking out their asses, Arsene Wenger disagreed with the refs post-match once again in this particular match. He offered up this quote, "The referees don't work enough because the level drops every season at the moment. Overall, it's unacceptable what has happened. The physical level is very good, but the decisions, the third goal, and the 2-1, we are in the game. He gives a clear offside goal, and of course that kills the game for us. Last year, we conceded 2 offside goals as well." So it's kind of like, oh, not only have we given up an offside goal, but we did 2 last year. Like,
you really sold that impression, by the way.
Did I? that I tried to give a little bit of a French accent. It just mostly went terrible. Hopefully Antoine Hopinot is not listening to any of this. Thanks, Twan. All that said, he really just, again, is kind of blame shifting. This has become a thing with Wenger. When he loses, there's always someone to blame. And you wonder, like, Mourinho kind of distracts people whenever United or whatever side he's managing are in a bad spell. He likes to kind of shift attention off the players. And if Wenger does this, he just, whatever way he ends up doing it, he makes himself look like a fool rather than, like, deflect in the way that he was hoping to do.
You mean, like, when he tries to be like Jose?
Yeah.
And then completely whiffs?
Oh, yeah. Speaking of Jose, excuse me, no, Jose's big nemesis, Guardiola, he offered up this in response to the post-match comments. He said, the penalty was a penalty. The offside was offside. But we won because we were better. And I think that's ultimately where the truth lies.
When he says the offside, was he referring to his third goal?
Yeah, I think he accepting that it was an offside goal, or at least the assist.
Anybody with eyeballs would also accept that fact.
Yes. And then he threw out this incredible shade by saying, they told me it was offside. I don't like to win in that way, so it is like this. But sometimes Arsenal win at Burnley in the 96th minute with a hand, and sometimes it's like this. So totally calling out the fact that they scored with a handball goal at the end of last season. So,
and that things are sometimes like this.
Yeah, sometimes they're like this. It's just how things are. City end up continuing to dominate the league, steamrolling yet another top six opponent. Arsenal just really faltering at the moment.
Yeah, they're down to like six. I think Burnley is the team literally nipping on their heels right now.
Always a good thing.
So, keep on rocking in the free world.
Yeah, let's whip around the rest of the Premier League.
Let's. And we will start with back on Saturday. Before we joined the UK in changing our clocks.
Yeah.
Match times were a bit askew.
For one day.
One day of madness. We'll start early in the morning. Stoke City 2, Leicester City 2, pretty good match.
Mm-hmm.
Really good match if you watched it here in America because you got Ian Dark.
Yeah.
Which.
Everyone just, they love Ian Dark.
How could you not?
I dislike Ian
Dark.
Oh my goodness. I'm sorry.
What are you doing?
I'm not.
What are you even doing?
I'm not trying to light anything on fire here, but at the same time, it's, I don't fawn over him in the way that most do. Are we going to end the show right now? We don't even need to talk about that.
Contact at Wrong Side of the Pond.
Yeah, I'm looking for a new co-host.
I will move on.
Mm-hmm.
Huddersfield got the 1-0 win over West
Brom. We don't even need to talk about the rest of the game in that I've just upset Jeremy so much about it.
Deeply offended.
I'm sorry about that. I really am.
Huddersfield gets a win.
Yeah.
Actually, the goal in this one was pretty hot.
Yeah, I will be honest, I've never heard of the guy who scored it before today.
But good on him.
Rajiv Van Lapara, if you were trying to guess where he was from, he's Dutch. But
that was my guess.
Yeah, that goal lifts the Terriers up to 10th place. 10th place, Huddersfield.
Up the Terriers.
Yeah.
Speaking of up... that would be the Cherries, as they finally actually, you won a match.
How about that?
Beating Newcastle in the 92nd minute with their goal. Hey, Newcastle.
Yeah,
Match isn't over yet.
Yeah.
Might want to defend that corner.
Might want to. Very good result for Bournemouth, considering they're still in the bottom three and desperately needing those points at this point in the campaign.
Moving on, Swansea fall to Brighton Hove Albion in the match of sea-based birds.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Glenn Murray. Yeah, Glenn Murray.
Yeah, it was Glenn Murray getting the goal there. Well-taken header there. The Seagulls flying high in eighth place. Swansea, unfortunately, the sea-based bird, lowest in the table. 19th is where they currently sit. Brighton are the highest of the promoted sides.
I feel like, quick moment on Glenn Murray.
Mm-hmm.
He is Ricky Lambert without the hype.
Okay, yeah, I'll buy that.
I'll
buy stock in that.
Okay.
Yeah. I bring this up because of the promoted sides. We talked about Huddersfield a minute ago, Brighton getting the win here as well, and the Newcastle being the other one. Newcastle's the lowest of the promoted sides in 11th place.
Not the one we were picking to be struggling.
No. I think we both picked two of them to go back down.
Yeah, so, and not that one.
Looking foolish as normal.
Speaking of them, Burnley get the 1-0 win over Southampton.
Southampton just scraping above the relegation places at the moment.
Southampton just kind of, like, I just don't even know what they are anymore.
They're a team that you don't expect to be there, but they've been in this kind of repeat mode over and over, and you can only rebuild so many times successfully.
Right, I mean, for years it was, they were the team that had all the hot young talent.
Mm-hmm.
And
now they've sold it all. Yeah,
I was going to say, you look at the Southampton lineup, and, you know, that Gabby Adini guy, Nathan Redmond, like, these guys you think should be playing better than they are, but, like, they're just not really doing much of anything.
Not right at the moment, no.
Liverpool get a bit of a win as they slap West Ham 4-1 in this one. Liverpool wearing their orange kits. I don't know if this was for the first time, but the first time I actually saw them.
It looked weird.
We mentioned this at the beginning of the season when we kind of did our kit reviews.
This was the one
I was like, it's just not you. This isn't you. You're Liverpool. You're red.
It was like you need to adjust your television set so that it, like, oh my God, someone's messed with, like, the contrast and hue to the point that Liverpool is showing up as orange. And it wasn't like a normal orange. It was like a weird muted.
It was a really, yeah.
Muted a highlighter is the way I'd probably
explain it. It was a highlighter color, which makes it, was like, you know, I made the comment on Twitter. It looked like they fielded 11 keepers. Because it was just 11 guys dressed as keepers.
11 keepers, 11 traffic cones, perhaps.
Yeah.
It's just a weird color of orange, that was for sure.
Speaking of, Mo Salah had 2 goals. And,
yeah.
Hey, how about that? He's pretty good.
Did you see the Lanzini goal, by the way? Just a magnificent, if there was a bright spot in this match.
Right. There was no bright spots otherwise, though.
No, this was
the manager's now going to get fired this week, and they're going to hire David Moyes, is all the reports are currently saying.
How about that?
So, only one way to go, and it is actually still down.
Oxlade-Chamberlain also got one for Liverpool. Has as many goals as Alexis Sanchez so far this season, so
yeah,
he's got that going for him. And then I think, is there only one match that we've left to this point?
I think so, because for the most part, all the matches on Sunday were pretty big ones, so we've already mentioned them, except for, hey Everton, you finally won a match.
Hey, they can do that.
Everton win a match. They were actually down 2-0 in this match. Watford keeper got injured in this one. Gomez goes out. He gets injured. They had to switch. So you're thinking, hey, Watford is going to be in trouble. They score to make it 2-0 right, like literally right after that. And then Everton start chipping back. They make it 2-2. Then Leighton Baines in the 91st minute gets a penalty, converts it. You're thinking Everton is going to walk away winners, but it got scary as a penalty was called for Watford in the...
It's in injury time.
Not the 94th minute. The 101st minute.
Oh my God. Awesome. Anytime you get into triple digits.
Yeah, it was 90 plus 11 that Tom Cleverley, former Everton man, stepped up and completely missed the goal.
Hashtag inside betting.
Wide left.
Mm-hmm.
So he drags it wide left, and it stays as a Everton victory, a much needed one for them as they continue to toil towards the bottom of the table. They are up to 15th now.
Yeah.
For the moment.
This was also a great little personal vindication for Everton's temporary manager in Unsworth, who took a bit of a beating this week, at least verbally, from Joey Barton, who gave this awesome quote. Who called him a glorified PE teacher. I watched him waddling onto the coach. How can you get players to exert themselves physically when you're out of shape? And he had to fend off literally fat jokes all week long. So big for the Everton.
Has Joey never played for Big Sam?
Who knows?
Yeah, and then like even in midweek, like they got thrashed. By I think it was Lyon.
Officially knocking them out of European competition, by the way.
Already, eh?
Yeah, way to go, gentlemen. So that brings us to the end of our English Premier League wrap-up. Let's quickly dance through the Champions League. We don't want to spend a ton of time on this because there's plenty of domestic stuff to get to, but there were a couple of results to harp on. I'll harp, of course, on Madrid being toppled at Wembley by Tottenham in dramatic fashion. 3-1 win. Chaos for Madrid. They're just – things are going from bad to worse for them.
Yeah, what is happening there?
You know,
I mean, Ronaldo scored, and it was like his first goal in a while. Also,
Ronaldo currently has the worst chance conversion rate in all of European football for players who have at least had, I think, like 12 shots or something along those lines. He's only converted somewhere around the range of like 7%, I think, of all of his chances, which I don't know if you're keeping track at home. That's pretty poor.
I'm going to guess Morata's in the top three on that list.
He might be. But all that said, Madrid in third place in their own league, struggling in the group, although they're likely to make it out as well. Let's head around Europe to some of the other results.
Yeah, Liverpool get a ho-hum win over Maribor. Not good. City win as they continue to roll. They beat Napoli 4-2, I believe this one actually was 2-2 at one point. Actually a pretty good match, but City pulling ahead, and then I think it was Sterling adding the cherry on top of that fourth goal late on. Back on Tuesday, United get the 2-0 win over Benfica. Bayern Munich squeak past Celtic. Atletico Madrid draw with Carabag, which softens the blow as Chelsea go to Italy with their Italian manager and completely crap the bed.
Spizanked by Roma, 3-0. Not a good day in general for the Italian side. Juventus also drawing 1-1 with Sporting CP out of Portugal. And then even Barcelona throttled a little bit themselves by Olympiacos, getting a 0-0 draw.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of a chaotic week as far as the big sides go, not necessarily getting the results you're used to seeing. Besiktas getting a 1-1 draw with Monaco. That knocks Monaco out of the Champions League as well on Wednesday action. Manchester City getting a big 4-2 win at Napoli. That was an incredibly entertaining match if you had a chance to watch that. If you haven't, scroll it back because it's the international break and what the hell else are you going to be doing? Porto getting the big one over Rasenballsport Leipzig.
Going full
that,
in there, right?
That, yeah, that gives Red Bull Leipzig a knockout out of the Champions League themselves. And then Dortmund even drawing with Apoel. That leaves them third in the group and really struggling for any opportunity to get through in that group of death with Madrid and Tottenham. So a pretty chaotic week in the Champions League fixture realm, and leave some of the teams that we're kind of used to seeing in the later rounds standing on the outside looking in. Clubs like Atletico Madrid are currently in third place.
And yeah, well, not only currently in third place, they're pretty much hosed. So at the next time that the Champions League teams convene, which I believe is actually the is that Thanksgiving week?
Yeah, it might be.
Oh, sweet, good. I'll be at my parents' house. I can watch. I can just sit around and watch those matches.
Yeah.
My mom is not going to be happy about that.
No.
She actually already told us that we're not allowed to sit on our cell phones all day.
No, that's
literally crazy. Got that email already.
Come on, it's Thanksgiving family stuff.
Yeah, that's when you're supposed me and my brothers, well, or at least one of them, will go and watch Champions League all day. He's an Everton fan, but he'll, you know, he'll still enjoy the real stuff.
Sure.
They play Carabag next match out. All they have to do is win that match, and they're through, and Atletico is screwed. Because Atletico can only get 9 points because they're so craptastic so far that they can only get 6 more points to get them to 9. And that those two matches remaining are Roma and Chelsea.
Yeah, looking
at that. And that's Chelsea's at home, at the Bridge.
Mm.
So they can the best they can do is 9 points. Chelsea only have to beat Carabag to get 10 points.
Seems likely.
Yeah.
Seems likely. Another side in a similar scenario, Napoli, sitting on 3 points after four matches in their Group F behind City and Shakhtar, so that's pretty unlikely. They'll move on. Dortmund, as we already mentioned as well. So a couple big sides could be dumped out of the top tier of the European competition here in short order.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be an interesting week of Thanksgiving as those matches reconvene them. Let's go stateside.
Okay. Let's
talk about MLS playoffs.
Or you want to start there? That's exactly where I wanted to start. MLS playoffs, much maligned by many people in the world of American soccer, but this year's playoffs have actually been pretty damn interesting. In particular, if you're a side that was ranked lower down in the playoff qualification side of things, as most of those sides are the ones who are advancing on to the next round.
By the way, what you just mentioned there, I do like. I love the consistency of the American sports fan who finds playoffs to be just repugnant in soccer, yet will watch the NFL, NBA, NHL.
Oh, and love all of them. Baseball. Yeah. You know, soccer deserves something different than playoffs. Yeah. Not to mention that there are playoffs all the time in soccer. Let's just ignore that entirely.
Except, but, you know, not in the Premier League, which is the only other league that exists.
Yeah, yeah. That's the only one.
So.
Let's start with the most boring of all of these matches.
Out to Seattle, eh?
Yeah, it has to be. One, because this game was tucked into, like, weird days every single time.
Yeah.
But regardless, Seattle advanced 2-0 after the home win over Vancouver. That's a 2-0 aggregate win. They go on to defend their title in the Western Conference Final against a side that I think you said earlier. I don't want to steal this from you, but you said this earlier. Houston. You didn't even know they were in the playoffs until you realized that they won their round against the Portland Timbers today. 1-2 win for Portland, or excuse me, Houston at Portland.
Not only are you in, but you're one of the four teams remaining.
This is an absolutely crazy stat. Remarkably, this was just the second road win of the season for Houston.
What?
Yeah. They've won one previous road game all season long.
Okay.
Conference finalists. Over in the Eastern Conference, things were far more dramatic. Let's start with the Toronto FC New York Red Bulls game. Final score for this particular match, Toronto 0, Red Bulls 1. That's a 2-2 aggregate final, but Toronto advanced thanks to goal difference. No, just kidding. Away goals. Where this match is super interesting is the drama that unfolded during the course of it and then even not during the course of it.
Between two national team members.
Yeah. Josie Altidore and Sasha Kleischen multiple times getting into little tiffs with one another.
Yeah.
One of which, I would call this the worst dive of the week from Josie Altidore, but I don't want to take away from Casemiro's ridiculous dive in the Real Madrid-Tottenham game.
Okay.
But Josie goes down in a dive almost to the point that I wanted to give him my wanker after Sasha Kleischen kind of peacocked him and like flexed his chest and they were arguing about something else that had happened. And they came together from their chest and you would have thought Josie got a full on shove. He didn't. But things escalated even more at halftime. If you haven't seen any of the videos that have surfaced, go out and watch them. They're ridiculous to watch unfold.
Yeah. Jose acts like he got like electrocuted.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's how swift his falling to the ground is.
Wendy
Williams thought he fell a little too quickly.
Yeah, he did. No, that was out on the field, not obviously in the tunnel itself. In the tunnel, various reports ranging from Altidore was jumped to Josie had Kleischen by the neck. Just ridiculousness that's being thrown around right now. You can't make it out in any of the videos that have made out so far, but a massive kind of, I don't want to call it a brawl, but like a huge fight unfurled in the tunnel at halftime as the teams were coming back out. And so much so that both Altidore and Kleschen were shown second yellows and were ultimately ejected from the match. So two of the best players for both teams absent for the second half. But unfortunately, the Red Bulls could not do enough to overcome it.
The teams played the final 45 with just ten men each.
10 men each. So high dramatics.
Yep. Toronto moves on and they will face the Columbus Crew, the team that their owner doesn't even want, as they walk into Yankee Stadium with a 4-1 aggregate, and you're thinking, yeah, this should be easy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you either just sit there and just hold the line, or you score one goal, and then it's, I mean, and then you're talking today, you have to just, you know, score a bucket worth of goals.
Well.
So this should be pretty easy peasy, right?
As we know, things tend to not go easy peasy. And NYCFC ended up notching two and then bombarding the Crew goal for a majority of the second half. Columbus somehow managed to pull out and hold them at that two-goal win, which sees them advance 3-4 on aggregate to the Eastern Conference Finals. So
they'll take on Toronto, Trillium Cup, back in play.
Back on the big stage where it belongs.
Yep.
It's truly one of the greatest rivalries.
This is the Eastern Conference rivalry that the league was hoping for.
Everyone wants this. Probably the final that everyone wants even more than an NYCFC, maybe Seattle final at this point, would probably be Columbus-Houston if I had to take a gamble.
Oh, that'd be the anti-MLS.
Not to mention that the color combination of the all-orange kit versus the all-yellow kit would just be fantastic for the television.
Oh, yeah. That'd be good.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the higher seed there? I think would Columbus host again?
I think they might in that scenario.
I might actually have to try to go.
Check your calendars, folks. So that is your MLS playoff update. If you want to talk about a real quick USL playoff update, Louisville City, our friends to the south. Many people in this town probably wouldn't consider them friends, but good for Louisville advancing after going to the Eastern Conference Finals for two straight years. Get the monkey off their back. Advance on penalties against New York Red Bulls, who they lost to last year, to face Swope Park Rangers, who become the first USL team in the modern era to repeat as finalists, although they lost pretty handily to the Red Bulls last year in the final. I think it was a 5-1 scoreline, but they get by OKC Energy, and they're on to the final for the second straight year. So,
if I remember correctly, they held the line for as long as they could, and then it went really badly.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't go very well. Over on the NASL side of things, both the spring and fall regular season champions, Miami FC, were dropped in penalties themselves by the New York Cosmos. The Cosmos advanced to the Soccer Bowl to face another zombie side in...
Yeah, zombie.
The San Francisco Deltas, who were able to hold off...
I'm pretty excited about the Deltas. I'm going to buy some merchandise. Where should I...
I think it was all given away for free.
Oh, okay. At the last home game? Yeah. All right. That sucks.
Yeah. So
okay.
They will meet up in the Soccer Bowl, and then potentially, should they win it, or even if they don't, fold up shop immediately afterward. So there is your NASL update.
Yeah, they got past North Carolina. Well, it's the Courage men's team.
Yes.
I don't know what they're called, actually.
North Carolina FC.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's Courage men's side.
Yeah, nothing like – I guess they weren't West. These were just semifinals. You shouldn't call them Western sides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
4-4-2. Yeah, not Western Conference.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, Raleigh is not considered in the West.
Yeah, maybe Western
Hemisphere?
North Carolina. Yeah, that Western Hemisphere might work as well. So there are your domestic playoff updates. But we're not done with the NASL. We have a little bit more to talk about with them. And to do that, we thought – hey, neither one of us are NASL guys. We don't really follow that league like some do. Let's bring in someone else that actually knows what they're talking about. And we did that tonight. All right, joining us now on the podcast, Nipun Chopra, Twitter handle at NipunChopra7, also of SockTakes, SockTakes.com. Nipun, welcome back to the podcast.
Jeremy, DJ, always a pleasure to chat with you guys. You know, at least I got to meet DJ this year. I'm still looking forward to meeting Jeremy in
the
flesh.
We're just ships passing in the night there. We just keep missing each other.
Yeah. Exactly, just missing each other by a day or two.
We'll make it happen.
One of these days.
We will.
Well, Nipun, we wanted to bring you back. Obviously, you've been following the story closely, and I know a lot of our listeners will have been as well. But the developments over the last couple days, weeks, months, in the ongoing lawsuit between the NASL and U.S. soccer, and I know there were some big developments that were handed out yesterday, basically, in a preliminary injunction case that the NASL had filed against U.S. soccer. So if you could, for those of us who are maybe not as astute in the subject, myself included, and maybe those of us who are looking for a little bit more detail on the matter, if you could give us like a quick, like, what would we call this, like a dummy's guide to the preliminary injunction ruling.
We know you have a medical degree, but we're going to make it that you also have a law degree here. So if you could kind of break this down for us, everything that kind of happened here in the last, 48 hours?
Yeah.
So what happened was NASL wanted primary injunction, which would have ensured that NASL had Division II status for next year. That was the goal of this primary injunction. Things kind of went haywire in the last week or so. Lots of new documents were filed, and then the decision came down yesterday morning at about 11 a.m. that the injunction, the request for injunction had been denied. What that means for NASL now is that they are not a D2 league for the 2018 season. And in terms of why why Judge Brody denied the injunction, it's kind of an interesting one. And of course, I'm, as Jeremy, you point out, I'm not, I don't have a degree, a JD, but from following people and listening to people who actually understand the legal decision, it seems that NASL failed to show conclusively that there was collusion that hurt the NASL directly. Although, interestingly, Judge Brody did say that there did seem to be some smoke in terms of the collusion between MLS and USSF. But the judge felt that the NASL did not meet the requirements required to successfully file a motion for injunctive relief, and therefore denied said relief. And as we speak, the next step for NASL seems to be that they're going to file an appeal against that decision.
All right. That's a perfect way of explaining it.
I actually understood that.
That I can understand and that made sense to probably most of us that are listening along.
So basically, the burden of proof was on them to prove that USSF was conspiring against them. And yeah, I think I saw that quote there, that basically there was smoke, but really no fire is what the judge kind of determined.
Definitely. And there's a lot more to it, obviously. And I can't pretend like I understand all the nitty-gritties of it, but that's definitely the takeaway that's I think, critical to where we are. And, you know, some of the other things that the NASL wanted was elimination of the PLS, the Professional League Standards. There was a lot of conversation about the need for those Professional League Standards. And at least from what I read from the decision, Judge Brody felt that there was some merit. There was some pro-competitive merit to the PLS, the Professional League Standards. But there was also an anti-competitive component. So let me put it this way to you guys. Judge Brody basically said what most of us said when we first saw this whole scenario, which was, you know, yeah, USSF not ideal, not great, not perfect, far from perfect, and likely there are some issues there. But NASL has its own problems, and the problems that have been caused for the reason NASL is in the situation it is in is has been exacerbated by the USSF problem, whereas the reality is that the position the NASL finds itself in is of its own design for at least a majority of it.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of things going on in NASL right now that are, it's hard to sit there and pin, hey, this is USSF's fault. The fact that San Francisco is apparently a zombie organization at this point, they just made it to the final, which is like 2 minutes ago. Zombie down. Organization that's going to be playing the final. They have that. They have, obviously, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers has been a bit of a mess lately. You know, you jump back 6 months ago, 10 months ago, whatever, and it was the Cosmos that were up in the air if they were still going to exist. This has been a very unstable league. I know you kind of mentioned that. Like, did USSF play a role in that? Possibly, but I mean, you're someone that follows not just the league, but obviously a team in the league. What has kind of been the spectators' take on, like, man, this league?
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's a hard one to answer, Jeremy, because, I mean, I obviously don't speak for all NASL spectators, and there's a huge diaspora and a huge disagreement within the NASL fan base, if there's such a thing, about the situation with USSF. I would say, as a general rule of thumb, Indy 11 supporters have felt that it was time to make the switch to USL. I don't know if you guys heard this in Cincy, but
they had some banners out at like their last match, didn't they?
Exactly, and even the game before that, before the banners, I was in the Brickyard and they were openly chanting, "Let's go to USL," which I'd never heard that before from the Brickyard. So I would say, as a general rule of thumb, Indy 11, the hardcore Indy 11 supporter base is now fairly in the pro USL phase. I think, as a general rule of thumb, if you talk to an average New York Cosmos supporter or a Miami FC supporter, they would absolutely hate the idea of joining USL. So it's hard to answer that question because I think everyone answers that question with their own specific biases, right? So for Indy 11, it just makes sense to be, you know, with you guys and be with Louisville City and have that local USL, you know, niche right here. Whereas for New York Cosmos and Miami supporters, they don't really have an in to USL. So from their perspective, yeah, it's a horrible situation and USSF is the devil. So it's depends on everyone's own biases, how they answer that question.
So let's talk a little bit about that, and you've kind of pitched how Indy 11, or at least the fan base, not necessarily the club, there's desire to go to USL. Where do you kind of see all these different clubs landing? Obviously, there's the idea of going to the USL, but there's also some alternative options that are out there, and perhaps a way for a lot of them to survive, but not necessarily the one that everyone would take.
Yeah, again, a great question, but a tough one. Let's go with the easier ones. Let's go with the easier clubs. I think at this point, North Carolina FC is almost certainly, we can even say certainly, going to be a USL club next year. So that one's easy. I think if CanPL, Canadian Premier League, kicks off, that's where FC Edmonton is bound. I think I would say it's likely, it's possible or likely that Indy 11 ends up in the USL.
Well,
I think Puerto Rico...
Let's jump back real quick. You mentioned the Edmonton thing. You guys at Sock Takes reported that they were one of two clubs that did not sign the 2018 letter of intent.
Correct. Along with San Francisco Deltas.
Yeah,
Zombies. And this was even before the NASL D2 was rejected. So this was actually in the application for NASL for D2 status. And they didn't sign a letter of intent.
Let's hit on something real quick here while we're getting on things that you guys have over at Sock Takes, which if you're not following that feed and that site right now, you're an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And you should also support them. You should also support them on
Patreon.
Whatever it's called. I do it.
Yeah.
Thank you guys. We really appreciate it.
We absolutely love what you're doing. One of the other things, and this jumps into something that a league that DJ and I just recently were a part of, and that is there are going to be some NAS or NPSL teams brought into NASL and funded by the other NASL owners for next year. Is that what we're getting now?
Well, that was the truth until yesterday, right? So had NASL survived, six NPSL clubs, namely Hartford City FC, Virginia Beach City FC, Boca Raton FC, Boston City FC, Detroit City FC, and New Orleans Jesters. I don't know if they're an FC, but whatever, New Orleans Jester. Those six clubs signed LOIs to join the league in next year. Not a single one of those teams meets all D2 requirements. And in terms of funding, they would have been supported by Mr. Rocco Camiso, Mr. Ricardo Silva, and Mr. Robert Palmer, who is the owner of Jacksonville Armada. So yeah, that was a story that we broke on the site. But now it's all up in the air. I've talked to owners, I've talked to people within the league, and it's pretty unclear where those teams will end up. My best guess is that a couple of it'll be a situational thing. I think a couple of teams will just continue to play in NPSL. A couple of teams will maybe look at NISA as an option. So it'll be a case-by-case basis. And what I can say is, I mean, this is a story we wrote on Socktics a while ago, but it's becoming, I'm going to try to write a follow-up to this. NPSL is really moving strongly towards the season-long play for next season.
I can go on here and right now confirm that's been the talk within the league for a while now.
Probably two or 3 years.
There's been a strong push for that from a lot of owners. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So exactly. So I think that option is going to be attractive to some of these teams that almost made the jump, because as you guys know better than anyone, what's going to happen is it's going to force these teams to go pro, because you really cannot attract college players to play in the fall.
Right.
So it's going to change the dynamic of the NPSL and push it towards a direction that I think a lot of owners have wanted for a while.
Well, yeah, I mean, as most NPSL teams will tell you, they can barely get the college kids to stay around for the entire season as it is. Right. You go full year, yeah, there's no chance.
I mean, based on the NPSL final, that's absolutely true, right?
I mean, you had a team in the final that fielded like 12 guys.
Exactly.
That they pretty much just had to go out and find
two goalkeepers, I think, or maybe it was zero goalkeepers. I forget.
Yeah, you don't need those. They're not that important.
I'm sure the head coach was a backup goalkeeper, probably.
Most likely.
Exactly.
So we've got this kind of murky future with a lot of the clubs that are currently in the league. Now, obviously the long-term prospects of the league itself are now in question. From a fan's perspective, what do you kind of see as like the ideal scenario, both from a league standpoint and for your individual club?
Yeah. I think in an ideal scenario, everything is under one umbrella. I think if we could have a situation where, you know, all these leagues were under one umbrella and basically weren't warring with each other, that is an idyllic cocaine scenario from my perspective. However, in the scenario that we live in, DJ, in which you are rightly called an MLS shill every day on Twitter, we have to basically think of an ideal situation that is realistic. And an ideal situation that is realistic, in my opinion, is to allow independent teams to exist in their own way. You know, I'm totally fine. I support the USL. I mean, I was at the final yesterday, right? I want MLS, USL, and PDL to thrive, but I also want an independent side of the pyramid to thrive as well. So I want an NASL, I want NISA, I want NPSL. So for me, An ideal situation is a joined, consistent pyramid, but a realistic and ideal situation is allowing NASL to survive. But unfortunately, we're not even in that situation anymore.
Well, I think we're all kind of holding our breath. Certainly, no one wants to tap dance on the grave of clubs or leagues or fan bases, and I think everyone wants to see a scenario where as many teams as possible can survive this call. And it's safe to say this is something that's been a long time coming. And that we've kind of come to blows in the way that we have isn't really all that surprising at this point.
You're right. And it's not surprising, but it's disappointing, right? I mean, it's disappointing. It's disappointing because I said this on another podcast recently. If we had a situation where owners tried to collaborate and tried not to put each other out of business, I think it would force the leagues to change their rhetoric. Because I think the toxicity is being driven by leagues more than owners. I think the toxicity is being driven by the Papadakises and the Rocco Commisos, as opposed to, Mr. Ersal Özdemir, for example, or Mr. Satterwhite, as you know, Jeremy. I mean, I think all these owners are fantastic. If they tried to cross, basically try to collaborate and say, look, we understand we're at war, but we want a team in Dayton and a team in Cincinnati to coexist. We want a team in Indianapolis and a team in Evansville to coexist. If things like that actually, if owners made those decisions to the league as a holistic idea, I think that would drive, that would change some of the narrative at least and start basically making cracks in what is basically becoming a larger and more thorn-covered wall on both sides. So, I wish that would happen. I've brought it up with many owners and they unanimously have told me that they would love to be a part of that conversation where everyone comes together in a room and says, you know, we can work together for the sport. But I think as long as the leagues are being led by the people that they're being led by, and this is true both of the NASL and the USL, I think we are in this toxic environment until one league truly dies.
I just got that System of a Down song stuck in my head now because he kept saying toxicity.
Yeah.
Toxicity of our shitties, of our shitties.
No one tuned into this podcast thinking they were going to get to hear Nippon do System of a Down.
If only I could sing the rest of it. What was it? Work up. Work up. That's what it sounds like to me. It's like a guy who clearly has some issues and is trying to sing his way through them, but none of those words make sense to me. So that's System of a Down.
Actually, sounds a lot like soccer Twitter. If you're asking me,
it's a lot of words. Well, none of it makes sense.
Yeah. So Nippon, we're delighted to have had you back on. Obviously, you talked about this change that we're all going through. Obviously, the next kind of thing around the corner, we're going to have an appeal most likely. Let's put all that aside. There's this kind of larger storm that's looming in the U.S. soccer presidential elections that are coming.
Right.
Don't worry, guys. Wijnald is going to fix all this. Hold on. We're Caligiuri.
We didn't tell Nippon that we were going to ask about this, but it's relevant and related. Who would you want to see come in and potentially guide those changes?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we, on Zoctis, we interviewed Paul Lapointe, who is a USSF candidate for USSF president. Sorry, I'm having trouble with words.
Down. Like, what is his – like, I've never heard of this guy. And that's what most people say.
And to be fair, I'll admit I hadn't either until I heard he was running for USSF president. He works in the UPSL, which is another one of the amateur divisions that has done basically kind of exploded in the last 1 year in terms of the number of teams they have. And his general viewpoint is one of collaboration and, you know, pro-rel and, you know, kind of the stuff that I think a lot of people have been wanting to see, and similar in a lot of ways to Eric Wijnalda, wants equal pay for play for the women. But you know, my question for him, and I asked him this multiple, I kind of pushed him on this on the multiple times on the podcast, is all of these guys have these great ideas. Eric Wijnalda has these great ideas. You know, Paul Lapointe has these great ideas. But what is the mechanism to actually achieve them? Right, because they're not the first ones to come up with the idea of promotion relegation in America. They're not the first ones to come up with the idea of equitable pay or equal pay, whichever one you believe in. They're not the first ones to come up with the idea of bringing all the leagues in at one table and forcing them to fix issues. All of this has been out there for years, right? These ideas have been debated ad infinitum, even on soccer Twitter for years.
Right. Ted invented pro-rel like 7 years ago.
Exactly. Jeez. Without Ted Westerveld, there was no promotion relegation. I don't know if you knew that or not.
He convinced England first.
Exactly. That's right. So, you know, what are their plans to actually make these things happen? And I think that is what all of us need to keep harping on. Everyone keeps getting seduced by these plans. Okay, this guy, Carlos Cordero, has this plan or he has this plan. What is the way you are going to make that plan actually happen? Because words are so easy. fixing stuff is miraculously difficult. And that is the challenge that is there for every one of these guys. But coming back to your original question, DJ, I believe if I was to endorse anyone right now based on everything I've heard, I would go with Eric Winalda, because he's someone that I see kind of reflecting the things that I believe in. Do I think he's going to be able to do all those things? No, because he hasn't shown me a plan to achieve things that I want to see him achieve. So I'm still as skeptical of him, but for what is a pretty, I don't know, what's the right word? A pretty unremarkable bunch of candidates, I think Eric Winalda stands out to me so far.
He is the feel the burn candidate of USSF presidency.
Yeah, that's actually a very good analogy and one that others have also made. I think you're bang on.
Well, excellent.
What does that make Sunil?
that's a really tough question. I don't know. Kim Jong-un, I guess? I don't know.
You heard it here first. Kim Jong-un comparisons. Well, Nipun...
Sunil strikes me as a Rubio guy.
Yeah. That's not a bad shout.
Just kind of milk toast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or even worse, Ben Carson.
There you go.
Oh.
Just falling asleep while talking. He did that in a press conference.
Well, hey, yeah, man. People are reportedly doing that on the U.S. soccer board as well, so...
There you go.
Yeah.
Right. That's shout out to Dana Shalala.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Nipun, thanks as always for joining us. We're glad to have you back on. We'll have to do it again here shortly. Maybe even get you together with Jeremy at some point in the future, although trust me, it's not really worth the wait.
Absolute pleasure, guys. Really, really enjoy talking to you always, and we'll continue to chat, whether it's on a podcast or via Twitter or in real life. Always a pleasure.
Hopefully in real life soon.
Yeah, sometime soon here.
Definitely.
Excellent. Well, if you guys want to follow Nipun, you can follow him on Twitter at NipunChopra7. You can also follow him on his blog among the other writers of Sock Takes, SOCTAKES.com. Nipun, it's been a joy.
Absolute pleasure, guys. Thank you.
All right. Well, again, always having Nipun on is a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't think he would do as much singing as he did. That was a new one.
Yeah, that was good. Everyone gets nervous after going through big storms, you know.
To the point where you can. just start singing.
Yeah.
Early 2000 alternative rock hits.
Hey, we said it was going to be a theme.
There it is.
Yeah. That leaves us with winners and wankers, I believe.
Okay. Would you like to start with your winner?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give my winner to both Juventus and Adidas for putting together an amazing collaboration for Juventus' 120th anniversary kit. I love throwback kits, massive fan of them.
Big throwback kit.
Especially when they're made modernly with modern materials. And they did so for this Juve throwback kit. Their 120th anniversary edition kit has simple black and white stripes, a nice crew neck white collar. And then normally with these throwback kits, you're like, oh, it's been spoiled by sponsor logos. But the Adidas logo and their Jeep sponsorship logo were both incorporated into one of the black stripes, and they were also black. So just if you were looking from a distance, it just looked like a plain black and white stripe kit, which is
that's pretty cool.
Just absolutely awesome. If you want to get your hands on such an awesome jersey, they only made like 120 of them. So good luck with that.
All right. Yeah. Should be easy to pull off.
Yeah. What about your winner?
My winner, you know, this is kind of a shameless plug. I haven't been able to talk about them in a while, but I wanted to throw out a congratulations to a team that I follow because of this podcast, Wycombe Wanderers.
I knew it.
Getting through to the second round of the FA Cup today,
mm-hmm.
As they beat a non-league side.
Does this mean you might get to see them on TV next round?
One more win.
Almost there.
Yep, almost there. So
hey, you got to watch them last year. It went really well for you.
Right here.
Yeah.
Right where I'm sitting.
How did that result go for you?
Proud of the boys' effort.
To be honest, they did put Spurs on the ropes twice, taking the lead, if memory serves me right.
Yeah, the player, Paul Hayes, who scored a brace, he is now retired from football.
Hopefully he stays that way.
I don't know. You guys got it? You guys hiring?
Maybe.
I mean, he's like 35, but
hey,
he can. His resume says, I scored a brace at White Hart Lane.
I'm just going to say, be careful what you say about 35-year-olds.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are they, like, still able to move?
They're great, okay?
Whatever.
Yeah.
Your wanker? Do you want me to go with my wanker?
No, I'll go with my wanker. I went with an easy one this week. Patrice Evra. Don't know if you noticed it.
Had himself a bit of an issue.
He did. His issue was kicking a fan. Not quite in classic ex-Manchester United player fashion and doing a kung fu kick over the board. But right. He did do a nice one-legged.
But this was like the match had ended. He was in the car park.
He was
getting in his car.
Nah.
And somebody ran up on him.
Nope.
And he just kicked him right in the chest.
This was before the game even started.
Oh.
Yeah. So while we saw halftime red cards in MLS action, we saw pre-game red cards in Europa League action this week. By the way, that was the first ever pre-game red card in Europa League history. So
always a first.
Patrice, bad move there, homie.
And as my buddy Andrew that I work with pointed out, like Patrice Evra is like Mr. Positivity, like motivational speaker guy now.
Yeah,
like, but that's kind of how he tries to brand himself.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he couldn't hold like on social media and stuff like that. He's always like trying to like give out like little inspirational like Instagram videos.
Weird.
But literally couldn't hold his crap for like 2 seconds and just kicked a guy.
I'm sorry, this is not surprising given this is also the guy who, I don't know, started an insurrection during a World Cup run. So
is that bad?
Yeah, maybe.
Is that bad?
There may have been some other instigators in that incident as well. So,
my wanker, going back to the crew getting that win, obviously it all started with a good 4-1 victory at home on Halloween night. And if you were like me and you watched it on the Watch ESPN app, you were a little confused trying to find the match because it showed a soccer match going on and it said Columbus Crew versus NYCFC.
Oh my god, yeah, I remember this now.
Saw David Villa there. And then it said showed Gonzalo Higuain in a yellow Juventus kit. Wrong guy?
Yeah, wrong guy. Yeah, it turns out they're brothers.
Mm.
It's confusing.
Yeah, but you know what happened. You know what happened here.
Someone just Googled
Higuain. Graphics guy was like, hey, we need a, like, he just went on their database and like, hey, we need a Higuain picture. Pop, 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 pop. He saw that one. Saw yellow kit. It was a weird, like, yellow Juventus kit that he was wearing. He goes, there it is.
There it is. Crew. Let's go. A yellow Crew Higuain picture.
And moving on with the rest of my evening.
I'm going on to my next graphic. Didn't necessarily QA that one very well either.
Wah, wah, wah.
Unfortunate indeed. ESPN even gets tripped up.
Happens to the best of them. Remember, ESPN had the app that for years. We documented on this podcast. Didn't know how to properly document the minutes in a match.
Yeah.
They rounded down instead of up.
It's unfortunate.
To say which minute it happened.
It is unfortunate.
Goal happened in like the 0th minute. It's not a thing.
So, it is, actually. It is, theoretically, at bare minimum. Also want to give a shout-out, by the way, to Gage Magoto. Longtime podcast contributor. He always sends in some questions for us. Longtime listener. Finally had a chance to meet him tonight watching the Crew game at the Beer Company.
Yeah. Couldn't make it.
Had to work. Bums. But really cool getting to see him this evening. Also had a couple questions that we've kind of glanced over a little bit tonight. Ryan Johnson wanted to know what is the best potential candidate to replace Sunil Gulati.
As you heard from our friend Napoon, he's backing Wijnaldum.
Ryan said, please don't say Eric Wijnaldum. Sorry there.
What about the French sounding guy that Napoon also mentioned that sounded like he had basically the same talking points as Wijnaldum?
Sure. We'll go with that guy. Yeah, it's not Wijnaldum.
Pierre Depardieu, or whatever.
So, there you go. Thanks, as always. If you want to ask us a question and we might actually answer it, get a hold of us. contact@wrongsideofthepond.com for the emails. Jeremy's at Jeremy Lance.
That's where I'm at.
Get at me at wrongsideofpond. Napoon, we gave you his earlier, Napoon Chopper 7. Yeah, give him a follow as well. But that's it this week.
All right, folks.
Unless you want to talk some more.
I have nothing else.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm done. Big grains falling.
I'm done with you for now, big grains.
Later, folks.
Bye.